thank you for joining us on The Skeptic Sidekick, where we delve into ancient societies, ghosts, the paranormal, UFOs, all looking at it from the perspective of the true believer and from the skeptic perspective. Joining me, my partner, my co-host, my sibling, Kimber Rodriguez. Myself, I am Richard Gregg. And again, let's look into being the skeptic psychic. Hello, and thank you once again for coming to the Skeptic Sidekick. I am, of course, your host, Richard Gregg, and with me, as always, as the one of the greatest people I've ever known, or second greatest, I should, third greatest, my sister, Kimber Rodriguez.
Hey, how's it going?
Going fine. How are we doing today, Kim?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
We're supposed to get some rain tonight, but it hasn't started raining yet. It's just kind of looming out there, threatening to, but not actually happening. I'm really hoping it does. I love the rain. It's just very calming and soothing, so fingers crossed.
Well, fingers crossed, definitely.
So what's new with you?
Well, just same old, same old. Getting in the process of moving the bunker deep into Roswell, New Mexico. Packing every day.
I find that so interesting. I mean, we recently did our podcast on Roswell not too long ago. So I think it's just very interesting that after that, all of a sudden, hey, I'm moving to Roswell.
Right. Small world.
Yes. Well, tonight we have another guest. We have Miss Solana Terra. And she is the author of the book, Letters Through the Veil, a true love story of her communication with her husband after his death. So we want to go ahead and welcome Solana to the show. And how are you doing this evening?
Hi, Kimber. I'm doing great. And Richard, I'm doing wonderful. Well, I have to ask you, Richard, how did you go from Kimber's your favorite person to your second favorite person to your third favorite person? Now who's number two and three, and what happened to Kimber one?
Okay. Just to get this straightened up, my favorite person in the whole wide world is my mother.
Oh.
My second favorite person in the whole wide world is my beautiful wife, Shauna.
Okay. All right, that explains it.
Yes. Following those two, I don't mind being the third.
Okay. I just didn't want it to be a mystery anymore.
Oh.
No. She's my favorite sibling.
She's your favorite sibling. How many siblings do you have?
I have four brothers and her.
Oh, wow. Wow. So, oh my God, you're moving to Roswell?
I figure, you know, once I get there, the UFO museum is probably where I'll be haunting, you know, just checking that place out.
I've been there. It was incredible. It's so interesting, the whole little town.
I've been there too.
Yes. Yeah, I drove through Roswell on a trip my husband and I took up to Utah, and it was a really interesting town. We just didn't have time to stop and really explore. So I've always wanted to go back and check it out. So now I have a reason to go do that.
Yes. Okay.
All right. So you wrote a book. It was called
Letters Through the Veil, a true love story of a woman's communication with her husband.
Right. Now, Rock was your husband's name, or is that to protect his innocence?
No, that's his name.
All right. I've known a few Rocks in my lifetime.
So you want to know the story?
Yes, ma'am. I would love to know the story.
Yes.
Okay. So I was 35, and I got brought to Hawaii. My background is yoga. And someone asked me to go to Hawaii with them to help them kind of like a personal yoga retreat and get their health in order and do meditation and so on and so forth. And then after that completed, I ended up staying, and I eventually went to a party and met my husband, my future husband, and we just literally, he asked me if he could marry me that night. But we went out 2 more years. But anyway, right after we got married, he died 3.5 weeks later. And I was pretty traumatized by the incident.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I was, because I was 35, I had never found anybody that I wanted to marry. You know, it had taken a really long time. And he was 33, he was younger. And I was in such a shock. I mean, it was just incredible. I mean, I literally couldn't function. And, but that night, a kind of voice in my head came and said, well, I had, it couldn't be that night. Maybe it was the next night. So at some point, something said, you're going to have to write about this. That night, and I couldn't get to sleep, but when I finally got to sleep, I woke up in the middle of the night and I heard his voice singing to me, a song that he had sang to me on our wedding day. And I could just feel his presence, and I felt all this love, and it was so blissful and so incredible. And I just felt him there, and I wasn't thinking, I was just feeling. And then a voice came in my head and said, oh, but he died. And that's when I just burst into tears. And then he kind of came in and said, now when I say I heard, you know, he was singing to me and I heard his voice, it wasn't like an audible voice like you hear my voice. It was like if you're singing a song in your head, you know, it was an internal hearing. And he said, if you feel our love and you'll feel the connection, feel our love. So that would calm me down. And he was always very good at calming me down anyway. And I could feel the love, and then I felt connected to him. It was, you know, he was, I could just feel his presence. And that just kept going on and off and on and off. And his mother had come out and some of his friends. And when I told them what happened, they were like, oh yeah, right, sure, okay. You know, very politely nodding their head. And I don't blame them. I said, you know, I communicate with Ra. And they didn't really believe me. You could tell. But then like 2 nights later, he appeared to his mother in a dream, and the same night he actually physically appeared to his friend. Now, neither one of these people believed in this kind of stuff, and yet they both, after that, had experiences that convinced them that he really was, that it was there. And it was really fun for me because I said, ha ha, you know, you think I was crazy, and now here you are, you're also having the experiences. And so, even though we used to meditate together and we used to travel up into, like, you know, into the spiritual realm and have communication and connect with our higher selves and ask for guidance and things like that. So after he passed away, the ability to communicate with him on a spiritual level had already been established. So it wasn't something new in the sense. And he really helped me move through the experience, even though, and this is very helpful for people who have lost a loved one, even though there's a part of me that totally knew his spirit was still alive and could feel his spirit, there was another part of me, which I would call my emotional self, like had no communication with that other part. You know, the fact that the mind understood and knew didn't affect the way that I felt emotionally. And so I was dealing with those two different levels at the same time. And so that part of him was able to help me, remind me to feel the love and just to kind of support me until I emotionally was able to get some kind of sense of grounding again. And when I wrote the book, again, because I was guided to do, I really didn't consider myself an author. And I just wanted to help other people that believed that there was life after death and was still dealing with grief. This was a long time ago. There weren't any books really on the subject. There's lots of books on grieving, but not what if you believe the person's spirit was still there. So that's what I did after I got through all the rehashing of how difficult the situation was and communicating with him. in the writing part, he started communicating to me where I started writing what he was telling me. And then he was telling me what life was like on the other side and how he was involved with beings that were involved in helping the earth. And it changed my life in that sense. I was already spiritual. I was already involved in that. In the sense that in order for me to get through that experience, I had to tap into some part of me that in the divine and God or whatever people use, tap into that and hold on to that and trust it. And there was one night that it was like time stopped, and it was literally I could see all these thought patterns on the ceiling in the left-hand corner of my bedroom that I was gonna have a different thoughts that I could choose. And at that point, I was going to choose a thought on what I was going to use to get through the experience. And I didn't realize how profound that was going to be. but the thought was, I could say, oh, it was my fault. I could say it was his fault. I could say it was the doctor's fault. And there was another one that was, I could trust. Oh, there was definitely one that said, I could be pissed off at God and don't totally, you know, turn my back on that part of life. And then there was one that said, I'm going to trust in the divine, that there's some higher reason for this, that at this particular point I can't even conceive of, and I'm just going to trust. And that was the one that I chose. And his mother chose another one, which was much more difficult. And it was so interesting to just see. I mean, it was obviously at that point I didn't have the reflection on it, but after, you know, I could reflect on it. It was very interesting, and I totally understand why. And I've met people after that in my classes that someone did die that was, they had a relationship with God, whatever their personal relationship was, and then they got mad at it and shut it out, and how much more difficult it actually makes their life because they shut off something that they had before that gave them some kind of something in their life, and then they turned from that.
They walked away from what gave them solace instead of looking at it as a healing process. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah. They just blamed, you know, they felt like God had punished them in a way, that God was doing something. If they had had this relationship, not punish them, but if they had had it, all of a sudden you're my friend. And if you're my friend, why the heck did you do this to me? Like they felt like they had, something had happened to them. And they couldn't conceive that there had to be a higher reason.
Right. I can understand on some level. My husband 2 years ago had a stroke, and thankfully he's still with me, but our life is so different than it was. He had a stroke at 42 years old, and before he was very, you know, full of life and loved to sing and write. He wrote songs, poetry, short stories. And for him to go from that to now he has trouble speaking. He really can't read. He can't write. And it's such a change. And I can see, like you say, as far as going of were we punished or was this a greater purpose for this? Or, you know, instead of trying to blame everything and everyone, accepting what it is and looking for a brighter future, if that makes sense.
Yes. Yeah. And but you can see how people can get pissed off and just say, you know, I don't want to have anything to do with that if that's the way it's going to handle me or whatever.
Right.
But I'm assuming now, because now that it's been 2 years, that you've adjusted more than you have been before. Plus, oh my God, that like happened like right before COVID or right in the beginning of COVID or?
It happened the year before COVID. He was in a nursing home for a year. And then he came home in February of last year. So he was all excited because when he was in the nursing home, he was just kind of like there So we're like, okay, you're home now. We can start going out to dinner. We can go to the movies. We can, you know, and then COVID hit. And so now at least he's quarantined at home instead of in a nursing home. Yeah. So that is a blessing, because if he was still there when COVID would have hit, I wouldn't have been able to go see him.
Right.
While he was there, I was with him every single day from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. So it would have been horrible. So I just thank God that he was able to come home before all that happened.
And like, although I tell all the, you know, the whole story in the book, like the end is, really, the end is, to, if I was going to say the point of the whole story is in the book, is that we can see that even though something, it seems like something really horrible happened to us, that there can be, that it, we haven't been abandoned in the sense. We haven't been, someone didn't like slap us on the hand and say, you know, okay, I'm not with you anymore. In fact, like I said, I had to hold on to that more. And I can only guess, Kimber, that you have changed dramatically in these last 2 years on how your whole self and how you had to deal with the situation.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Before, I was very dependent on him. I never really liked to go anywhere by myself, and I had to learn how to become more independent. And if I needed to go out and do things, do it by myself and not have him there with me. And I remember one night when he was in the ICU and he was still unconscious, we didn't know if he was going to live or die. And I remember I was falling asleep and all of a sudden I just heard this like almost angelic voice speak my name, and it woke me up. And at that point, I kind of knew that he was going to be okay and at least he would live. And it was just an amazing experience that happened.
I got goosebumps.
Yes.
Yeah, that's incredible. And then that also gives you a sense that, again, that there's something still okay and good about the experience. It's not this terrible experience, but it is what it is. It's really what the truth is. And
right.
It just reminds me, there's this great story. I used to teach world religions. I have a master's in religions. And one of my favorite stories, can I tell a story?
Of course.
Go right ahead.
Okay. One of my favorite stories that I love to tell my students was, this story is called The Farmer's Son, and it's from like China in that area. And there's an old farmer, and he had a son, and they had horses. And one day, I guess the main horse ran away, and the neighbors came over and said, oh, you know, poor you, such misfortune, your horse ran away. And he goes, we'll see. And then a couple of days later, the horse comes back and it brings a whole bunch of wild horses with it. So now he's got a whole bunch of horses. And the neighbors came over and said, oh, that's so great. You're so fortunate. You know, how lucky you are. And he goes, well, we'll see. Maybe. And then his son decides that he wants to try to tame one of the horses. So he goes on the horse and he rides it, and he falls off the horse and breaks his leg. And the neighbors come over, oh, you know, how unfortunate, bad luck. And of course, what do you think he said?
We'll see.
We'll see. And then the army came, because they were needing young men to be in their army and to fight in the army. And when they came to see the son and saw that his leg was broken, they didn't take him. And of course, then, and so the neighbors came over and said, oh, that's so great. That you're so lucky, how blessed you are. And of course he said, we'll see. But when we have a long-term thing, I mean, I can see now, I mean, I don't think, it almost sounds horrible to say this, but I mean, my husband died in, it was almost over 20 years ago. It was 1995, over 25 years ago. And I can say absolutely true that, you know, there was a perfection in it, and I really wouldn't want to have it any other way, because so many things happen. It sounds horrible, but it's not really the way that it sounds. It's just, I can see all the things that happened that were perfect now, We were living in Hawaii. You know, I would have been this little housewife, you know, have kids, you know, and which was nice, you know, but instead my whole life changed, and you know, I traveled around the world and I did things that I never would have been able to do. Hawaii is an island, you know, there's things you just can't do there. And so I think we can't see, and Kimber, what you said is just a great example. There's things and ways that you've grown that wouldn't have happened if it didn't change. And the other thing was that you also got the blessing of, you know, oh, he has a stroke, but you're happy that he's alive rather than he passed.
Right.
Right. You got that opportunity. If you say, oh, it's horrible that he got the stroke, instead you got the experience. You're grateful that he's alive.
Right. Yeah, it definitely has been difficult, but I am so grateful that he is still here with me.
Yeah.
And he does struggle a lot, but he does have I'm trying to think of how I can describe it. Like, a lot of his mental capacity is still there. He still knows who I am. He still knows his family. He still...
He knows who I am.
Yes. Well, your family, so. But there's so much, even though there's parts of him that are lost, there's still parts of him that are still there.
Right.
And before, he was a very doom and gloom person. He suffered from depression. And since the stroke, he's become such a happier person.
Oh, wow. See? Yeah.
And he's always laughing and smiling. And so that is good for him, because he's not that doom and gloom person anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Because something got shut off in his brain that was creating the doom and gloom.
Right.
We have a family member who has really bad dementia. And before, he would hold grudges against people and he wouldn't talk to one of his family members for years. Once he started forgetting things, he forgot. He was angry at his brother. Oh. And now he just loves his brother and he forgets that he didn't talk to him for years. They all have these blessings that if we just accept, you know, things to be as they are, then our life becomes better. I mean, even the COVID thing. I mean, there's so many very difficult and challenging things about the whole thing. But there was also, if people look, I don't, you know, for me, I know there was just a lot of blessings in it also. And a lot of things opened up that were never available before. And so I think life is like that.
That's true. We always seem to focus on the negative. It's like, oh, COVID, I'm stuck at home, we can't go anywhere.
Yeah.
But we're spending more time with our families.
Yeah.
We're focusing more on our inner self-evaluation instead of what's going on around us. So there are some good things that have come out of it.
And I mean, spiritually, from, you know, the kind of the realm that I hang out in, they considered it a great initiation. Like, we got our buttons pushed, and all of us. And it was like whatever a person's big button was, it would get pushed. I mean, people that, you know, that had to have a certain religious holiday, you know, wasn't able to celebrate that holiday. Certain people that, you know, if money was your issue, or if your relationship was your issue, whatever it was, it seemed to me like whatever the biggest thing that I had to work on, that was just in my face. Fear about your health, you know, whatever it was. And if we got through it, then I don't know. Richard, did you get a big button pushed during COVID?
COVID for me was kind of an interesting time. The last weekend in April, I was, I wouldn't say laid off, but they said that the job was still there, but the work wasn't. So they closed down the whole facility where I worked at due to COVID restrictions. And about 2 days later, I got a call from my father-in-law, basically had to be run into the emergency room due to the fact that he had a problem with dehydration. So being the only son-in-law that was able to take time off, well, because I was off, to actually go down and take care of my stepmother-in-law. And it was not a fun experience. And so after that, you know, he got out of the hospital, spent about a week in a recovery center. And then turned around, I went back to work, and he was like so surprised the fact that I came down and was willing to help in the limited capacity that I could. So that's my COVID story.
And did you grow through it? He's hesitating.
I've always been that type of person to that actually is that, you know, something needs to get done. I'm the family member that everybody turns to when something happens. So it was basically, I didn't grow, but my surroundings grew.
So is your button got pushed?
I mean, basically, yeah, my button got pushed.
Yeah. Like I said, some perspective of it, there's a lot of really high perspectives. And again, just that all of the earth itself is going through a big shift, and all the dark things, in order for more light to come in, for example, you know, more spirituality to come in, more light, whatever you want to call it, higher consciousness to come in on the planet, when that energy comes in, all the dark things have to come up so that we can see them, so that we can move through them. I remember once my sister went into a restaurant, they were buying a new restaurant, and they were cleaning up the place, and they moved the big garbage can, and all these cockroaches came out. Gross. And so it's like that, you know, it's like COVID allowed all these cockroaches to come out in politics, in religion, in the government, in the police force, I mean, in all this stuff. And they were, it wasn't like it wasn't there. It was always there, but it became more that we can see it. And now hopefully, you know, move through it. Things like that. We're not letting them get away with what we used to let them get away with. And the pollution on the planet, I mean, that was beautiful. I don't know if you, did you ever hear any of the stories? Like people could see the Himalayas in India before they couldn't see it and the waters were clearing up. Did you hear any of those stories?
I did hear about in, I think it was Venice, that the waters were clearing up in Venice and that the dolphins were coming in and playing in the canals or something like that.
Yeah, it was like that all over the world, even here in the waters here, and you could see the water clear. The pollution was so much less because of people weren't flying. And like, you know, the Himalayas, I mean, people could see the Himalayan mountains from before where they couldn't because of the pollution.
I heard a story that from L.A., you could actually see Mount Shasta.
Wow, that's incredible. You know, I wish there was like a news report on TV that said, you know, look, this is all the good that's happening, and this is good is happening, and you know, this good is happening, and not just one little focus on all the bad that's happening.
Yeah, that's one thing I've never cared for media about, is they always focus on all the negative because that's what brings in the views. But
yeah,
there's so much beauty in this world. If you just turn off the TV and look around you, it's amazing what you can find, not only in the world, but in people even. There's so many good people in this world.
Yeah. And all the people that were helping out other people that were had food problems, and you know, water problems, and there are so many people, groups of people that reach out, and yeah, what it would be like. I mean, the news, usually they'll put on the negative, and then maybe some of the news will put like 2 minutes of something really positive that's happened. And what our life would be like if, you know, if that was going on. And they're calling this like this time of great awakening, and people are reaching out. They realize that they need to be calmer, so there more people are reaching out, wanting to learn how to meditate, and realizing, you know, they need to do yoga, or more people realize they need to exercise, and they appreciate going out and going for walks. They say more people are using the outdoor nature facilities now more than ever before. And people want to connect with other people, where before they didn't want to talk to anybody. Now all of a sudden, they want to talk to people because they haven't been able to talk to people. So there's really, there is this shift that's happening. And the shift is happening, and it's opening up, and people have more communication with angels. I mean, that's incredible. You see so much angel communication mm-hmm. going on now. And there's just so much. And I guess, you must see some of it with the, with your podcast, that it's more open now. And it's a time of great awakening.
Discovering a lot more people actually have a very good sense of humor and are willing to discuss what they believe, as opposed to a couple of years ago before COVID, where they were like, you're a weirdo, go away. They're mm-hmm. actually trying to seek answers.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Right.
Yes, exactly. Lots of times that's what we need in order for people to kind of wake up. Like for me, with the situation that happened with my husband, I mean, it just like hit me on the head and made me go deeper. Like I said, I was already into it. I was into yoga and also for years before that. But it really made me tap into that thing that was the only thing that I could use to get me through it. The people that are willing to make some changes, that's what they're doing. And I mean, there's other people that are suffering more because they're not looking at, what's going on inside me. If we look in what's, going inside ourselves, and we realize, wow, I have a lot of fear, or I have a lot of anxiety, or I have, what it is, and then be responsible and choose to learn how to deal with that better. And they can, if they see that, then their life will be better.
Right. Some people are so hesitant to change that they focus on the negative, and they see the negative, but they want to sit there and dwell in it instead of saying, exactly, what can I do to improve my situation to make things better?
Right. Exactly. Because it takes courage. It takes a lot of responsibility. And because the courage takes to face ourselves when we see, oh my God, this is coming. Like when COVID first hit, I was like, wow, for me, I could see that the news just, it created fear mm-hmm. all over. And I was like, whoa. And I was like, oh, I can see right now, I not to go into fear. And so in my family and in my house, it was just like, just don't go into fear, because what good does fear do? So when you see fear, you could see it and feel it, you can make a change to go, okay, whatever it is whatever it is, whatever your viewpoint you use. But fear creates stress, and stress lowers the immune system. And the thing that we need to do the most is keep our immune system mm-hmm. up. So if we get into stress and we get into fear, then that totally doesn't help the situation.
Right. No, definitely. And that was the thing with COVID, is they were so focusing on all the negative, and
yeah,
not that it's not important, but it was like almost the fact of people were watching the yeah, website to see how many people have died today. And yeah, I mean, not that I'm not concerned about it, and not that I don't grieve for those who did yeah, lose their lives, but right, I don't feel like I should just get consumed by it, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And also, hopefully some people realize that, the numbers that they're giving us aren't necessarily accurate. You have to go, well, how do they know that? How do they know exactly that number? Mm-hmm. And why is one person saying one thing and one person saying another thing?
Right.
And why is, this group saying that this group is saying that? And so it's always still about, how do we maintain our peace and happiness within ourselves? Mm-hmm. And like, that's what you had to learn to do, with the situation with your husband. It's like, how do you get through of moving through this is a horrible thing to coming to peace and acceptance and gratitude mm-hmm. about the situation.
Right.
Got to stop listening to the doom and gloom.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes. Stop listening to the doom and gloom, first of all. Second, look for the positive in the situation. And like you said, be grateful for what you do have instead of focusing on what you yeah. don't.
It's really just logical. Because if I focus on something that's unpleasant, and then I keep focusing on it, it doesn't make me feel good. And am I making a choice? So do I have a goal in my life to feel happy? Do I have a goal in my life to feel at peace? Yes, I do. Well, how much of a goal? How much effort am I really making into doing that? And it takes so much awareness, and it takes intention, and it takes effort. And that's why they're saying this is a time of great initiation, because for us to get through this, I mean, you think about how we are now compared to how we were a year ago, there's a lot more acceptance of it. Where in the beginning of it, it was crazy. I mean, it's still crazy, but it's less crazy. Now it's like normal.
Right.
In a sense. Just get used to seeing people walking around in masks and really, like, even if I said, oh, this is crazy, that's crazy. Well, I realize every time I said that, you know, what am I doing to myself with those thoughts?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, yoga has been my background, and I don't know if you know that, you know, yoga is more than just physical exercises. It's a whole way of life. It's a whole philosophy. It's about being aware. It's about greater awareness. It's about finding ways to have peace within ourselves. And,
mm-hmm.
and it's about spiritual awakening. It's about realizing that, you know, from a yogic perspective, every human being is here for one higher purpose, and that is to wake up, to realize that greater self of who we are. And the way to do that is to see all those places that we get stuck and make decisions to move through them. And if we don't make decisions to move through them, then we stay stuck. And if we stay stuck, then we're not happy.
Right. I remember my old boss, she used to say that the only way to get over something is to go through it. And that yeah. can be the hardest thing in the world to admit and do. But if it's not done, you're never going to get past it.
Right. And it does, Kimber. It takes courage, because, like, I remember after Rock had passed away and I wrote, I felt like I was going through school, the sadness 101. I had never dealt with sadness before. And I didn't really know how to deal with sadness. And in my mind was telling me that sadness and crying, that was really bad. And now more so I realize that when we have those emotions, we just feel them. The way to release them is you allow yourself to feel them, not to have the mind judge it, oh, this is bad, because that's like that story, is this good or this bad with the farmer. It just is what it is. And experiencing sadness on some level is incredible. And all right, I'm guessing one of you, maybe Richard, did you guys ever watch the whole Star Trek series?
I am a first, I should say, I actually watched it. My first episode was Cat's Paw, 1973. When I was 3 years old, two and three quarters, where it was a summer. And I stood there in front of the TV, and one of my friends were playing, and dad of the house basically told me, well, if you're going to watch it, sit down and quit blocking the TV. So that was my first time watching Star Trek.
I figured you were a Trekkie.
He is a full-blown, all his life, Trekkie.
Right. So, you know, like, Spock gave us such an example of human emotions. And then when they had the one with Data, I guess that was the second Star Trek mm-hmm. series, you know, where he was the robot.
Next Generation.
Right, the Next Generation. Thank you. You know, he would try to feel emotions, and he would bring to us the awareness of what it's like for a human being to feel emotions, and how he wished he could feel emotions. And I realized the emotion of sadness was such an incredible experience. Like, I had never felt such depth of experience, of feeling so deeply. And so that in itself was incredible. It's like, wow, I never felt this before. This is incredible. And so if the mind doesn't judge it and it just accepts it, and then you go, okay, well, a sadness is here now. Sadness is present, and I'm just experiencing sadness, and it just is what it is. And like you said, the only way to get through it is you experience it. And if people try to block it off their life, then it really creates blockages in their systems.
Definitely. Yeah, the newer Star Trek, I think, has gotten just a little bit off the deep end. Yeah.
Nothing beats the first one.
Nothing beats Leonard Nimoy, William Shatner, and DeForest Kelly.
Yeah, and it was me, just to share this little sibling thing here with you, it was me and my siblings, my two brothers, because I was in between, I've got an older brother and a younger brother, and sometimes after we got older and lived on our own, I would call him up when the series repeats came. I would call him up and talk to him about this series that was just on. It has so much incredible knowledge and wisdom. There are so many episodes that have a deep truth to them. I just found it incredible.
Yes,
exactly. I mean, one of the stories about the original Star Trek is that Gene Roddenberry took the second pilot episode to a convention, a science fiction convention, and he's sitting right next to this guy going, what a piece of tripe. My gosh, this is just nasty. You know, who wrote this? This is just lousy. And so he stood up right in the middle and said, excuse me, sir, this had to be my production. That is a show called Star Trek, and that's going to be the best thing that's going to be on television. And the gentleman that was making the snide comments was Isaac Asimov.
Wow. Wow.
Who happens to be one of the prolific sci-fi writers of the 20th century.
Yeah, There are still episodes that come to my mind, and one of them that I find still very profound is the one where somehow these two beings, I don't know if they were put in tubes or whatever, they didn't have their bodies, and then they asked two people on the Star Trek to let them use their bodies. And then they could, so they could be in a body again, just so that they could have an experience of being with each other. Do you remember that one?
Yes, I certainly do. In fact, I just watched it about a couple weeks ago.
And what's so incredible about it is that we don't realize how incredible it is to have a human body.
Right. I think it's called The Conscious of the Mind or something like that, or.
Oh, I don't recall. It's been so long ago. But I still remember that. And again, from a higher yogic perspective, the ability to be on Earth and have a human body and experience ourselves as spiritual beings having a human body. And even one, that's one thing that Rock said after he passed away. He said, you know, it's totally different. You know, he could be with me and see me, but it's totally different actually being in a human body and being able to physically touch a person. And I think it's just something that we take for granted in a way, but it can be an incredible experience to realize what it's like to be able to touch, to be able to smell, to be able to taste, to be, you know, to be able to touch your loved ones. That ability to touch a loved one physically and feel them is an incredible experience when you see it from the perspective of what if we didn't have a body?
Right.
So I love that episode. And I think, again, COVID has brought to our attention the importance of taking care of our body, the importance of eating good foods, the importance of keeping it healthy and exercising it, and the gratitude to have a healthy body.
Mostly people kind of forget about the human body. They mostly want to talk about the what's going on the outside world instead of what's going on inside themselves. You know, the doom and gloom in that.
Yeah.
Right. Be honest, mm-hmm. that we're all kind of linked to one another.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's an incredible truth that we are really linked to each other. Kimber, did you ever hear of the woman, I actually don't remember her name, but she wrote the book Stroke of Insight?
I haven't, actually.
She's got the most popular, if you Google it, she's got the most popular TED Talk ever that went viral. Like, I think it was the first one that went viral. And she is a brain anatomist, and she had a stroke.
Oh,
and while she was having the stroke, she said, oh my God, this is so cool. I'm having a stroke. Cause she was seeing the stroke from the inside, you know, she was actually having the experience. And she talked about her stroke shut down her left side of the brain.
Mm.
She couldn't talk. She couldn't, she didn't know language. She didn't know what mother meant. She didn't understand words. But what happened was, because her left side shut down, her right side opened up. And she had this experience, what Richard just said brought my awareness to it. She had this experience that, oh my God, we were just all this, we were just huge being, and we're just in one, in oneness. And she was in bliss. She called it nirvana. And it was just incredible. And she didn't understand how she was able even to fit in that little body that she had. And it just totally opened up a whole other side of her. And it took her 8 years, and her mother worked with her to be able to speak again, to be able to learn the alphabet and, you know, everything else that she needed to do. And now she goes around and talks about it, and talks about the right side and the left side of the brain, and how we can move into that place where we can be both. We're an individual being with a body, and at the same time, we're also this expanded spiritual being that's having an experience in the human body. And she really talks about how to navigate in both experiences rather than one experience over another experience.
Wow, that's amazing. I'm definitely going to have to check that out.
It's phenomenal.
Yes, I love those stories when you hear about these people who have had a stroke, and then, like, through hard work and everything, like you said, it took her 8 years, but she was able to regain those things.
Yeah.
It gives me hope that someday my husband is able to do those things again that he loves, such as writing and reading and all of those things.
Yeah, if they want to, I guess.
I remember hearing a story about this woman at a TED Talk where she was actually a brain surgeon. And she was talking about, you know, when she had a stroke, she's like, you know, she immediately knew she was having a stroke. So she picks up 911. And, you know, that's like, of course, he goes, 911, what's your emergency? And in her mind, she says, hi, I am having a stroke. Could you please call the ambulance and get here immediately? And then she says, what came out was,
that's her. It's the same person.
Yes.
She's a brain anatomist. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, I'll definitely have to check that out.
And again, what we're realizing, we're having more and more experiences of a spiritual awakening. We're seeing that we have more potential than we believed. We can have experience where we're individuals and we're personalities, and we have our whatever we do in our life and our families. But there's another side of us that it kind of has a lot of wisdom and that really yearns for peace and really yearns for us to find ways that we can feel like we're in harmony with our surroundings. And at the same time, it also, for everybody's, you know, kind of inner voice is different. And for some, it's a lot of, okay, well, we have to say that this isn't acceptable anymore. If we're too easygoing, sometimes we, you know, it really yearns for us to start putting up boundaries and to stop doing things that we did before, if it's not for our highest good, in the sense. So that, I think, is coming out more. And the spiritual awakening and the thing with life after death, I think one of the greatest things with life after death is that's helping people is to realize that they don't have to be so afraid to die if they believe that the spirit still continues on after death. Then it can take away from the fear, because a lot of people are very afraid, you know, what happens after they die, and then they turn into nothingness.
Right. And that's actually one of my biggest fears. As much as I say I believe in everything, when I think about the death and the ceasing of existence, it is very terrifying for me. And, you know, I hope to believe that there is more out there than what we see, but I still have that fear that's, you know, when I think about it.
Sometimes fear of dying is the fear of, I don't want to die and, you know, be in great pain, you know, be shot and bleed to death. That's one fear.
Right.
And then there's another fear, but this is what you said, is like to feel like there's non-existence, like you won't exist anymore.
Right. That's my fear, is to cease to exist.
Right.
All my memories, everything just to be gone. And that to me is terrifying.
Yeah. That's interesting, because in yoga, there's a practice called yoga nidra. And there's a practice where you relax the body and you feel the body relax, and then you relax the breathing, and then you watch your mind. And so you see you're not the body, because if you can watch your body, then you're not the body, because there's a you witnessing your body. So if you were it, you wouldn't be able to witness it. Mm-hmm. And then the mind too, you can see your thoughts, so you're not your thoughts. And when that quiets down, there's still something that exists. The thing is, if you have moments where you put awareness on that and put consciousness on that, then you get to know that part. So the whole idea about spiritual awakening is to get to know that part, the part of you that, like your intuition. Have you had intuitive hits?
Yes, I'm very intuitive.
Right. So there's something, that intuitive self is not your body. It's not your mind. There's something higher than you, and that's guiding you. And if you feel comfortable with that, get to feel more comfortable with that, you could see that's not your physical reality. That's something that's beyond your physical reality. And supposedly that what still continues on. Some things that could be considered proof, you know, are the people that have had near-death experiences. You know, they left their body, they looked down, they saw that they still exist, and then they totally lose their fear of death. So I would ask your higher self to tell you more about itself.
Okay, definitely.
I know that they say that people most of the time have either the fear of fire or the fear of water. I have a fear of dying alone.
Really?
Yes.
Actually, that's a common fear, because so many people have that. So many old people now, because they live by themselves and they're all at home by themselves. So let's just say you have the fear of dying alone. What do you think would happen if you died alone and no one was around?
There wouldn't be anybody there. My cats would eat me.
Your cats would eat you. Your cats wouldn't eat you. No, really, what? You think that you'd lie there and no one would know that you were there, and you'd just decompose?
Yes.
And no one would ever find you?
Yep.
So what would be different then if you died and someone was with you? What would change? Someone would, at least, you know, would take care of your body? Your body would be protected.
To me, it would be like, instead of seeing the four walls or something like that, seeing somebody that loves me beside me, holding my hand as I take my final breath. That I'm not forgotten.
And so then, again, the same thing could be a solution. Have you had intuitive feelings? Have you aware sometimes of something higher, spirit guiding you, that's who you are?
You know, the reason why it's called the skeptic psychic is not only am I intuitive, I'm kind of over-intuitive.
Right.
I feel emotions. I've seen dead people. I've actually communicated with the dead. I've just got this whole, sorry to say, curse behind me, where basically, you know, I don't know what to do about it except for the fact of shutting it off.
You don't want to feel the feelings that you're feeling of other people.
Exactly.
And that's okay. I mean, you certainly have the right to do that. We have the right to say we don't want to feel that. And so, you know, that can be a good thing. So it's not even if your body's safe. It's almost like if you're going to go move to Roswell And you don't want to just go and have no one to say goodbye to. You want to go and let people know that you're going. People know where you are and they have a going away party for you. So you're leaving, but people are aware that you're leaving. And you still have a connection. You don't want to leave without a connection. You want to feel like you have a connection.
Right.
So that's interesting. I have a friend. We made an agreement a long time ago that when he leaves, he's going to send me images of oranges so that we can still communicate. So when I start seeing oranges around, I know that it's him. So what can you do so you don't feel like if you die, no one's there? I can see that, though. I can see how it almost feel more scared to leave without someone with you as you take your last breath. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's a great honor, actually, to be with someone when they're passing the last breath.
When my grandfather died back in 2006, I believe, wasn't it, Kim?
I think so. Yeah, I think it was 2006.
The last day I went by, and he was kind of breathing and sleeping. And I kind of, you know, talked to him for a while and read his favorite passage from the Bible and told him I love him and went home and got a call. My first father-in-law answered it and said, Richard, you need to go back over to your grandfather's house. He's gone. So I went over there and sat there for about 5 minutes in the room, gave him a kiss on the head and says, I've always wanted to do that. I could feel him kind of chuckling to himself.
So did you feel like you were there with him?
Yes.
So you feel like he didn't die alone?
No, I don't think he died alone. Like I said, when I kissed him on the head and said, I've always wanted to do that, I could hear him chuckling to himself.
So you gave him something that you would like someone to do for you?
Yes.
I've done a lot of hospital work and hospice work, and now they have these programs that's actually called something like Do Not Die Alone or Not Dying Alone. You know, we have people that come in the hospital and they're dying and they don't have any family or they don't have any friends, and volunteers just come and sit with them and spend time with them so they don't have to die alone. I think that's an incredible thing that's happening that's all over. Obviously, a lot of other people feel the importance of that too.
It's interesting what you were saying about the oranges. My nickname for my dad, he always called me his little ladybug.
Uh-huh.
So when he passed, I saw ladybugs everywhere. Uh-huh. They would be on my car. They uh-huh. would come and land on me. If I shoot them away, they would come right back. And the last time I saw one was actually when my husband was at the nursing home. There was a ladybug there in his room. And I always believed that that was my dad's way of letting me know that he was still with me.
Yeah, I got goosebumps on that one too. Yeah, and it's incredible. I mean, like one time on my birthday, my sister and I were driving and a van pulled in front of us with the license plate Rock, which was my husband's name. And I was like, oh my God, that's incredible. And then I think I turned on the radio and, you know, a song was on that, you know, maybe the song from Ghost or something. And I go, oh my God, like, what is going on? And I said, like, what do you have, a calendar up there or something, you know? And it seems so incredible when things like that happen. Like, almost for, I don't know how many years after he passed away, almost always on either our wedding anniversary or the anniversary of his death, there someone would come next to me and have like a pocketbook or a shirt or something that said Rock. And one time we were at a government building and same thing, it was on the anniversary of our death. And there was a big statue of a guy with Rock's last name on it, you know? And you just go, wow, that's incredible. And you question it, you know, you go, wow, you know, could that really be, you know, can they really do that? And you have this, you know, it's question of the mystery of, you know, how do they do that? And is it really them? And I remember once a feather fell right in a pool when me and Rock's mom were together. And it's just, it seems like, oh my God, that had to be from Rock. It was just so incredible. But you still question it. And when I used to give lectures and workshops after I wrote the book, and the stories that people had, like so much more incredible than anything I experienced. and with loved ones and so many people, and they were so happy to be able to talk about it. You know, electricity going on, TVs turning on and off, and telephones ringing, and it was just incredible. So, you know, I don't understand it all, and I don't know how they do it. And it, of course, our mind is going to go, is that really them?
Right.
But it is incredible. It is incredible.
Well, you have just a bountiful information, and we've enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah, it's been really nice.
We would love to have you back again sometime. Maybe we can talk about the universal consciousness of the Earth, as well as the galaxy and the universe itself.
Sure. And some more Star Trek.
By the way, I did find out the name of that episode.
Uh-huh.
The name of the episode was called Return to Tomorrow.
Oh, huh. That is incredible.
I had to find out because I would not be the perfect Trekker, Trekkie. Without... Anyway, Kimmy, do you have any last words or anything like that?
I just want to remind our listeners that we ask that you rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. We do read the reviews on air. We ask for 5 stars, but we'll take anything. You can grow and learn from anything that we are doing wrong. So we just ask, please let us know how we're doing. If anybody else would like to be on our show or they have any questions, they can always reach out to us at info@skepticpsychic.com. Do you have anything you'd like to add, Rit?
Actually, where can we find you, ma'am? I would love to find out more information.
Okay, thanks. So I have my website, which is solanatara.com. And pretty much everything's on there. I mean, I'm all over social media, but solanatara.com has you know, the link to the book and more about me and everything else.
All right. And on some final thoughts here, you know, the world is possibilities and love is God. God is love.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. And we look forward to talking with you again. And as always, everyone, have pleasant dreams.
Unpleasant nightmares.
All right. Thank you both. It's been really fun.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.